Thanks, Dave.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, let's start off for our listeners who may not be familiar with the convergence, which seems hard to believe because this is your ninth year and it's a, you know, a project that just keeps growing. But let's give them a quick thumbnail sketch, Mark, about what the convergence is about and you know what sort of things are going on.
Okay. Well, the Village Building Convergence, also known as VBC, is about whatever sort of initiative that people at the community level want to undertake, and our job in City Repair is to support that. So that can take many, many different forms, but if a community, for instance, says, wow, we find ourselves without a public square here, we'd like to practice a little free assembly, convert some problems into opportunities, then they say, okay, we don't know how to do that, who do you call? And so they become involved in the Village Building Convergence oftentimes, and when we become engaged, our job is really to support their initiative. So we'll convene people from about November to now, when everything kind of finally gets built, literally, out in the field. So we'll convene community representatives from across the city, and they'll come together as a huge group together, all of the community representatives together. And they start to treat each other like a resource, opening doors for each other, reflecting on each other's process and projects. And it's not just sitting around a meeting. I mean, you literally start to see community threads and networks being woven across the table. And instead of us just sitting there with a blackboard telling everybody what to do, instead, our job is to kind of prime the pump and see the community come alive. So that results in this sort of dazzling array of almost like retrofitting of the city, you know. We find ourselves, all Portland communities have been built by developers. Oftentimes, they don't have a cultural imperative, so they don't create gathering places. There's all these sort of ecological amenities that are missing. So we go, oh, wow, we need to make our kids more safe. We need to slow traffic. We need a gathering space. We need to make this place reflect our sensibilities. So then they undertake these initiatives. And I think we're now at 150 projects over the last 9 years.
Wow, that's quite impressive. And I mentioned a few things out there, like the water catchment system and native plant gardening. What other sort of projects are happening this time, or have happened in the past, for that matter?
Well, the rebuilding center that people see up on North Mississippi features a project of the Village Building Convergence, which is a gigantic earthen masonry entrance, which is not just functional as a place for people to gather, but also it's quite beautiful. And it demonstrates really the highest form of ecological creativity, in the sense that Cobb is totally localized. You don't really need to truck it a long distance to get it there. In fact, you can pull clay right out of our soil here in Portland. And then with a little bit of sand and straw, you can create basically a natural form of concrete that is non-toxic. So you're not exacerbating or creating a further problem with global warming. So you're not really relying on oil. You're not relying, or you're not impacting global warming. So these are solutions that also build community at the same time. So these are integrated solutions.
Well, I'd like to turn to Bruce here for a second and bring us to the question we opened up the program with, which was the relevance of the convergence. You know, we're looking at fairly historic economic crisis going on, and this is, for some communities, this is on top of what's already been some pretty rough times, and as a result, in certain communities, the infrastructure was already starting to crumble, and now with what's hit recently, that's only accelerated the fact. I'm thinking, like, you know, there's 16,000 African-American households in the metropolitan area. Nearly 10% of them have moderate to severe physical problems to the structures. I mean, these are things like faulty electrical systems, no insulation, things that not only have an impact on the livability of the individuals in that home, but have an overall impact on the community. And when we're looking at that level of problems, it raises the question, are doing some of the, spending energies and bringing the community together around things which, albeit, do enhance the quality of the community, but is it really addressing right now, is it a good prioritization, as I guess what I'm getting to? Are we really meeting the needs that the times demand?
It's a great question, and let me start by saying that I come to City Repair with a background having worked studying neighborhood associations in a lot of different contexts. I worked on the outskirts of Lima, Peru, in a shantytown for a while, looking at a neighborhood association there back in the 90s when they had an economic disaster that is way more intense than what we have here. I worked in Baltimore for a while as well with neighborhood associations, and recently was in Cuba, where I actually kind of got to see a state-supported neighborhood association. So coming with all of that, I always am asking that question of how relevant is City Repair, the VBC? How successfully or not successfully is it reaching a diverse group of people? And I think these are really crucial questions, and I really appreciate that you raise them, because within City Repair, we ask these questions quite a bit. My basic answer is that when you're talking about large-scale economic crisis, of course the government and the business sector has to play an important role. And I think that's, in our culture, that's where most people are trained to look for the answer. What is our government going to do, or what is our business sector going to do? The value I see in City Repair and other similar kinds of organizations is that, in addition to having government and corporate interventions, communities themselves have to get involved. This is true in Peru, in Cuba, in Baltimore. Communities really have to step up and say, what can we do? It's a democratization of the problem, essentially. And so City Repair, I think, provides, and the VBC provides, a good forum for all kinds of different people to come in and say, okay, we're going to figure out to some extent what we're going to do too. And so I think that there are limitations to what City Repair does, but that's the heart of the most important piece of it, I think. And it doesn't only involve building Cobb. It involves getting people together in amazing workshops about how to work together with other people. At one of the VBCs a couple years ago, we brought together representatives of the labor movement, of the environmental movement, of community organizations. So it really is a forum within which the progressive movement can really deepen their connections and the arena within which they can work together more effectively.
Well, we're talking this morning with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik, both involved in the Village Building Convergence as well as involved with the City Repair Project. And we want to ask you to give us a call and join us in this conversation about the convergence, its relevancy today and the current economic crisis, what it means, if you've been involved in a project or if you've seen one in your neighborhood, and what's the impacts you've observed. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Are there certain obstacles to taking the sort of things that the convergence does and using, you know, expanding it? I'm thinking, you know, in terms of some of the alternative building systems you use, like Cobb and other materials, you know, so that we could actually look at this becoming, you know, much more widespread and carried beyond the confines of the convergence. Are there obstacles you're facing, like, you know, are there building code problems? Are there, you know, city ordinances, other things like that, that kind of put a governor on how far we can take the convergence examples?
Great question. Well, I think the most important or the most difficult impediment is also the key to our any kind of forward momentum, and it's a human one. It's you know, the interface between the community level where the initiatives come from, and then regulatory bodies and bureaucracies and leadership, and I think what we've been doing really beautifully is, from the beginning of this, of the whole movement that we're a part of, our strategy was to not fight, but to go in and engage and kind of start dancing with people, whether they realized they were dancing or not. And what we have now is this incredible relationship with the city, in which it sees itself as, it sees City Repair as a way for it to engage its own goals. And to take its goals and to see them put on the ground out throughout the community. So that's what we actually intended, and it's beautiful to see that it's kind of flowered in that way. But, you know, in order to get even farther, we have to work with the regulatory bodies in order to do things like changing codes. Now we have this vast and deep network of people who are practitioners and theorists and people who are out in the field, you know, leading projects. Recently, we had a meeting to start organizing some specific initiatives because an invitation has come from the city actual code officials, and they're saying, we want to legalize all this stuff. You need to line your ducks up and start bringing us this stuff in a specific format. So we actually have built our own capacity to take things forward, and the city has opened the door to say, bring us this stuff. So, but you get there through building community, and that's what we've been doing for the last decade.
Well, I want to, there's some other avenues I want to follow on that particular line of discussion here, but first I want to go back to the phone lines because we do have some callers on the line, and if you want to join us in the call, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We really want to hear, too, from folks who have been involved in past building convergences or have had projects going on in their neighborhood and get your impression of what your experience was like, how you've seen it change or not change your community. So let's go to the phone lines where we have Scott on the line. Good morning, Scott.
Morning, guys. Thanks.
Yeah.
I was just curious, the guest would comment on the parallel between low-tech versus high-tech. There was a current article in this week's Willamette Week talking about great technologies that are, you know, windows with better insulation, generally, you know, stuff like that. And then we talk about things that are a little bit lower tech, maybe not as insulative, but are more local. And actually, if you look at their whole lifespan, most likely going to be lower as far as on the energy consumption scale. But as it parallels everything with what our country's going through, simplifying, scaling down, that type of thing. It's just a general comment, but I'd like to hear your opinions on that.
Okay, thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
Well, I'm coming from Communitecture, the sustainable architecture and planning firm over at 12th and Market, as well as City Repair, so I can speak to those issues pretty well. Well, we like to employ, on one hand, the low-tech, because it's our favorite approach. It tends to be less energy-intensive, and it just requires more creativity. And you can end up with far more outstanding performance simply through design choices, like orienting more glass toward the south, designing thermal curtains into your home so that at night when you close those curtains, you retain your heat. These are simple things that you can interact with and that can be fun. It can be part of the culture of who we are, as opposed to a high-tech solution, which is, you know, certainly part of the notion that we can just keep building and building and building, and now we've got this great new way to keep, you know, making everything look like steel and glass and tall and, you know, bold and somehow saving a little bit of energy. But on the front end, these things are incredibly energy intensive to create. And, you know, people are saying, well, you know, we're doing better. This is still way, way unsustainable, but it's a little better. So that's a huge difference between the kind of low-tech approach and the high-tech approach. The high-tech lets us feel like we're really making a difference, and often in many cases, and we're actually not. Like the things that you're seeing being built in the Pearl District, you simply can't build a triple insulated glass wall on all four sides of a building, absorbing huge doses of light from the south, east, and west, and then just losing it on the north side, and call that ecological in spite of what, you know, how much of an improvement it is on how we do things now. It just doesn't really work that way.
And with regard to the technology question, I think we always have to keep in mind that there's a social dimension to technology. We can't just, in my opinion, resolve our problems by getting very high-tech gadgets without looking at how the community is connected or not connected. Like, just take the example of having a highly efficient car. If every single family has a high-efficiency car, a hybrid or whatever, which are fine and great, but if every family has one or two, and they're all driving those cars individually, it leads to all kinds of problems, no matter how efficient that car is. Whereas if you have communities that know each other, where people feel comfortable carpooling and so on, then I think that you get to a better solution, which is using efficient technologies, but in a healthy community, leads to the best optimal outcomes.
Well, we're talking this morning with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik of the Village Building Convergence, the ninth annual one. This is the ninth year that it starts in Portland tomorrow, actually, and runs through June 14th. And we're talking both about actual activities that are going on, but also we want to take a bigger, we're taking a bigger picture approach here in terms of the relevance of the convergence, what it really means in terms of how it gives a voice to the community. And we'd love to hear from you about your thoughts about this or your experiences if you've been involved in past convergences or if you've seen projects in your neighborhood and seen what it has or hasn't done in your neighborhood in terms of impacts. And you can do that by giving us a call at 503-231-8187. Before the caller, we'd been talking a little bit about the regulatory side of that. And one of the things I was curious about is, have there been any proposed projects, techniques, what technology that you've put forward and the city has, you know, which you feel is really an important thing to move forward on, and the city has just said, no way, we can't go there. You know, I mean, you've just literally run into a wall, maybe it, not a Cobb wall, but...
Yeah. Well, let's see. I suppose the answer to that is, well, there's all kinds of things that are happening, and city repair and the village building convergence isn't always aware of everything that the communities are doing as part of this process. Or if we are aware, we don't always say. So the truth is, all across the country, there have been kind of grassroots, under-the-radar tests of different approaches. Like, you know, there's gray water systems and composting toilet systems all over this city that are not legal, but you do them as experiments in order to, you know, understand them as a community, and then finally you get around, then the city gets around to legalizing them once they understand them too. But in order to get there, you have to start doing it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, I would say that but the city government actually has never said no to anything that we've brought them. I mean, except at the very beginning when we said, you know, hey, can we turn a street intersection into a public square? And understandably, they said, well, that's impossible. That can't happen. That's never been done. So, but we've managed to move through that together. Dignity Village is a project that we've worked with a lot.
I was just going to raise that because that was one of the ones the city repair project has been involved in heavily, hasn't it?
Yeah, from we were a founding supporter and helped them to build all this ecological housing out there that's, you know, for no-income people. And I think we did that for under $200 a house. Actually, I like to talk about that because people say, why don't you build some affordable housing? And this is like below affordable. And the most beautiful thing about it is the key to being able to do that is enlisting the people themselves. It's got to be their idea. They have to have a passion for it. They want to go out and source the materials and do the design work. And so we hooked the village up with these young designers. And then we brought in the Village Building Convergence to organize a lot of people from across the community who had tools and skills. And then they worked with the villagers. And in the end, what you get is this, you know, it's this wonderful ecological passive solar craftsman style thing made out of stuff that was going to the landfill. Mm-hmm. So, just multi-tiered solutions integrated.
Now there are convergences in other communities, right? And is there some sort of semi-organized thing of, you know, every June cities are going to have these convergences? Is there communication between Portland and other communities that are doing convergences? Is this a big conspiracy, Mark, is what I'm asking you?
It is a conspiracy, for sure. Well, last year, I think there were five convergences that I know of, and one was in North Carolina, one was in Wisconsin, and let's see, one was in up near Seattle. And I don't know of the other two necessarily, or maybe I even went to them. I don't know. Well, people are sending folks back and forth to be a part of this and learn from each other. So, yeah, the model in North Carolina is different than the one here, and it's a really great thing for us to take a look at too.
And what are they doing in North Carolina?
Well, they basically bring together a lot of different organizations. So, you know, as opposed to City Repair, where we put out a call and then we support communities and then we bring in other partners like Rebuilding Center. Over there, they just bring all these community organizations together and they say, all right, how about if we coordinate what we're already doing, but all do it together, all in one period of time, and then create all this synergy out of that. And then at night, they're, like we do at a central venue, there's speakers, there's dancing, there's food. So they took that part of the model from us, but then adapted the placemaking and, you know, physical change, infrastructure change stuff. Then they evolved their own model for that.
I think there's, it's exciting the way that City Repair and its model is growing. I wanted to highlight one concern that I have. you were talking about what is a barrier to this. I think the challenge that I see for city repair in Portland as well as elsewhere is how much can we reach out to different kinds of communities? We tend to draw in the already convinced, the already converted in some ways to this model. And Dignity Village is a good example where we really broadened out. And I think that City Repair and other groups need to do that more. But it's a puzzle how to do that. I mean, how do you get people who are working 60 hours a week to come and dedicate themselves to this kind of community project? So I think that's one of the barriers that we're still facing. All environmental social organizations face across the country, and I just wanted to highlight that as something that I puzzle about a lot.
Can I mention one project that's very strategic? Actually, I'd also like to describe the venue activities a little bit, but first I want to just mention the Buckman Neighborhood Community Composting Facility that's going in. Now, it's true Buckman tends to be populated by more folks, you know, left of center folks. And I think a lot of them are doing composting, but are they doing it in the streets? You know, whose streets? Our streets. Let's compost in the streets. That's what they're doing in Buckman. They actually have the city government saying, wow, let's totally facilitate this to happen. We'll put this whole array of facilities out on the street. Now, that's really great. The neighbors for two blocks around that space are organizing to do that, and they're painting the street with this wonderful kind of vegetal graphic as well. So the larger neighborhood gets to see that and interact with it, and then people from across the city and the region actually hear of it. It gets written up, but they also come and see it. So the thing sits there actually functional, but it's also highly symbolic. And for people who don't even ever turn a crank on this composting wheel that they're installing, and they just simply see that that such a thing is possible, it affects people beyond the reach that we can actually intentionally attain. And I think that's kind of part of the key, so that it becomes viral simply by people being exposed to it. That's a huge thing.
Again, we're talking with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik of the Village Building Convergence, and we'd love to hear from you about your experiences with the project, and if you've had a convergence project in your neighborhood that you've either observed or been involved in. Let us know what you think, how it turned out, what impacts it's had on your community. Where do you think the convergence is still relevant under today's economic conditions? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. I want to go back to, I mean, one of the things that we often talk about on Voices from the Edge is that question of how do we get beyond just preaching to the choir? And even if the choir is quite large in Portland, it still is far from representing the entire community. And you said you've puzzled about that, Bruce, about how one reaches out. And I'm curious, have you encountered or have you thought about how do you approach communities where the culture of the community is different than whatever the, you know, if there is, a, you know, if we can stereotype the convergence culture as such, where there's, you know, obviously differences because they've just come from a different experience. How do you work at making connections there, or how do you absorb, you know, have them infuse their ideas and their cultural perspectives into what's going on? I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. How is that going on in terms of the Village building convergence?
Well, let me give you a concrete example about this Village building convergence. Is that there's a school that has a lot of his Latino kids and Spanish speakers. And so we recently worked with somebody who's a Spanish-speaking representative of that community, and we're actually translating into Spanish a lot of our documents. We are really making an effort to reach out to that particular community to make sure that they're invited in. There's also, in that particular school, a number of students, kids from Africa. And so really there's this effort to make that project very multicultural and celebratory, basically, of different ethnicities. So that's one small and hopefully growing example of ways in which City Repair can and the Village Building Convergence can move into a more diverse, multicultural direction. Not to say that we want to abandon our, you know, the kind of longstanding community in any way, But that there are arenas for growth, basically, around that.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines because we have a caller on the line. And if you want to join the conversation, especially if you've had experiences with past village building convergences, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And we have another Scott on the line. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
What about, since you're talking about infrastructure and multiple issues kind of melding into one efficiency, why not perhaps a future project, maybe even next year, to have the folks consider having public power? Now, I say this as a preface. In 2003, there was a vote for a Multnomah County People's Utility District. It got 50,000 votes, the majority of which were in Portland. And the majority came from Southeast Portland, where much of the VBC activities come from. So right there is the core where talking about change, the ability for the actual citizens that are users of electricity to become the owners of the electricity and where it comes from, how it's distributed, whether you have solar panels or insulation, and that it's actually very community-oriented. Is that something that the VBC could actually consider doing in the future?
Great question. Mark or Bruce, which one of you want to field that one?
Well, I'll go ahead, Mark.
Okay, Mark.
The sky's the limit. If somebody wants to initiate that, then we'll support it. I mean, the truth is we've never said no to anything that people have said that they want to do. So, I mean, if somebody steps forward and says we want to do, you know, an energy infrastructure project, we'll certainly help out. In fact, there are several people involved in the Sunnyside Initiative that has to do with geothermal and photovoltaic solar energy. And so in a related vein, we ourselves are already preparing ourselves, you know, without even really thinking of it, for somebody to come forward through the mechanism of the VBC to say, hey, we want to do this. Now, if they want to get it done in our time frame of whatever, 6 months, let's do it. Like, design it and fund it and install it, we can do it. If they just want to lay the political groundwork and you know, do the social networking, we can do that too. If they just want to have a community conversation to start off their process, we can do that too. It depends on what people are ready for.
Yeah, I just want to say and thank you. I think the suggestion will be forthcoming. There's a lot of supporters of both VBC and public power. But I will say on the Sunnyside Initiative, as you call it, that is not geothermal. That is actually going to be steam pipes, and the source of the steam is going to be a small natural gas plant on public land, a school district land. So that's the current phase, which is, of course, not opposed by the current utilities, Northwest Natural Gas, or PGE. But I thank you for your time.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Thanks, Scott. So let's, you know, you've been talking about bringing people together. Let's walk through a little bit about the actual process involved. How does it start in terms of, do you just put the call out there, and who are you reaching out to? Are you working through other organizations, your own networks, a combination?
Well, I'll say something about that really quickly. As a board member of City Repair for the last few years, I've really been impressed at the way in which people can very quickly get involved in the VBC or in City Repair, and within the space of a month are suddenly like major organizers of a particular event. So City Repair over the last 9 years or 12 years has really established connections to lots of different communities in Portland. And we often create these workshops, these public speaking sessions, where people can come and float ideas and see whether there's energy around them. So it's a pretty amazing and inclusive organization in that sense. If a person is listening to this radio show and has an idea about how to enhance community, enhance environmental sustainability in Portland, wow, you know, come to the VBC, chat with people, and very quickly you can find that there are often people around you who are like, that's exciting, and really get involved in it. So it's an arena in which things get catalyzed really effectively.
Now, are there any overarching guiding principles or criteria, or is the moving forward of a particular project just based upon the response of if there's the energy there to do it?
I would say quickly that there's kind of a history of things that we've done in the past, but especially in this last year or so, there's been a wide-ranging conversation within City Repair, within the associated communities about how can we do things differently too, not to stop the models that we've used, but to expand on them and change them. So I wouldn't say that there's guiding principles, but there isn't any kind of template that has to be followed. And this is a particular moment this year in which we are really looking for new energy, new directions, and ways to take this in expanded directions.
Right. I'm thinking, obviously, if someone comes forward and says, I want to build a nuclear reactor in the Sunnyside neighborhood, you guys are going to be not on board with
well,
that.
Well,
right?
we would say, well, it's got to be participatory. No, there's principles. I mean, there's principles for sure. And one of them is that it has to be collaborative, and you have to be working with people that are part of a culture. And sometimes these projects happen in the public right-of-way, and in that case, there's really specific criteria, like, you know, you need to be working with people within a certain radius, and you have to go through an open-ended process. You don't just say, hey, we're going to build a nuclear reactor and here, you know, sign here, you know, and we'll decide together what color it is. No, from the get-go, what is going to happen has to be something that people decide together. But then there's also projects that happen on sort of the so-called private side of a line, on private property, and we support those things too, if they are open-ended, sort of workshop-oriented, educational processes that are relevant to the community. So, everything that we do has to have community benefit. It has to be open-ended and participatory and inclusive, and you know, all of the things that are really, really key to community building.
And excuse me, I assume there's, you know, certain green criteria. I mean, you're looking at wanting to. You know, I mean, you're going to be wanting to have some. Do you have some criteria about the types of materials being used, and you know, that we're not replicating on a community level some of the bad examples we see at the, you know, at the big end of the scale of, like you were talking about in the Pearl District?
Yeah, yeah, there is something of a criteria. I mean, when we put out an RFP in October, which is a shout out to communities all over the city saying, hey, the process is about to start again. You know, what do you have in mind? Here's examples of things that have been done in the past. And we lay out some of the important things to consider. But then the things that come back, tend to be integrated solutions. I mean, I'm finding this really fascinating. We might have a misimpression of ourselves as a society, because what I see over and over again, even in so-called places where people aren't literate in these processes or they haven't gone through them before, you know, someone who's doing it for the first time will start thinking, well, you know, we've got to pay for this. It's got to be built out of something, and it's got to have some kind of benefit. Who's going to do it? They start to integrate it, and it's really beautiful to see how that happens. So that's almost an inherent part of the process.
Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines here. We're talking with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik of the Village Building Convergence, which is starting tomorrow and running through June 14th. And we'll be talking about the contact information and all that good stuff a little later on here. But we'd like you to join us in the conversation, particularly if you've been involved in the Village Building Convergence in the past. It's been going on, as I said, for 9 years now. If you've had a project in your neighborhood, what you thought about it, were you involved in it, what's the impact been? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Well, let's go back to the phone lines where we have Joanne on the line. Good morning, Joanne.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line. Good morning.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to ask the people there with the project. I suppose you can't include, or you would not be able to include or want to include the following. The negative effects and energy from cell phone towers on top of buildings or those other things they have for cell phones. So I'm under the impression you probably can't or wouldn't consider doing something about that negative energy of these things. So I will listen to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Joanne. That's, and not only, I guess, around cell phones, but is there, yeah, sort of the flip side of that of not just building, but preventing, you know, sort of a preventative measures aspect of the building convergence?
Well, I'll take that. There are certain limitations to what city repair and the village building convergence can do. I mean, those kinds of regulatory structures are usually outside the ambit of what we're dealing with. But What we do is provide an arena within which people can come and ask those questions and then perhaps be connected into other groups that focus on that. So, you know, we really welcome people who have any kind of environmental health concerns to come to these kinds of events. And what you'll find is that they're made up of people, the events, the speakers are all sympathetic to these concerns and will usually be rich resources of directing you to additional sources of information, as well as who to contact that really focuses on that. So we are a conduit, basically, to a lot of different concerns. Even if we don't address that concern ourselves, we can point you in a helpful direction. And I have to say, having been at various VBCs and so on, I've seen people come in with concerns about fluoride in the water and so on, and really get connected into the right direction.
Well, we're going to move on here and start talking about very specific things going on at the Village Building Convergence. But first, I want to remind folks why they need to keep that dial set at 90.7 FM or leave their keyboard alone on their computer and listening to the live stream at KBOO. Because at 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Per Fagering hosts a new show, Fight the Empire. His guest, journalist Pepe Escobar, talks about Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Pipelinestan. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, an interview with University of Oregon Professor of International Studies Anita Weiss on the breaking crisis in Pakistan and a critical look at the situation in Darfur and the Save Darfur movement with Professor Mahmoud Madani, author of Saviors and Survivors, Darfur Politics and the War on Terror. At 11 on Between the Covers, Jay Thiemeyer speaks with Kevin Sampsell, editor of the anthology Portland Noir. His guests include writers Monica Drake, Kimberly Warner-Cohen, and Bill Cameron. At 11:30, host S.W. Conser speaks with legendary filmmaker Lloyd Kaufman, author of Make Your Own Damn Movie, Secrets of a Renegade Director. All that coming up this morning on KBOO. And while we're also in announcement mode, just want to let you know about a couple of other things coming up later in the week. Next Wednesday at June 10th, the Portland 9/11 Truth Alliance presents the Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism, an introductory lecture by Valdis Analaskas, former anti-Soviet dissident and political exile, author of a best-selling book, Discovering America as It Is. That's going to be happening next Wednesday, June 10th, 7 p.m. at Laughing Horse Bookstore, 12 Northeast 10th Avenue, just down the block here from KBOO. And lastly, we have coming up on June 7th, the third annual Portland Guitar Show and Swap Meet. Now, there's a segue from Frankfurt School and Cultural Marxism to Guitar Swap Meet. that's happening 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Lentz Masonic Lodge, and that's 5811 Southeast 92nd Avenue. It's $7 admission, and for more information, you can go to portlandguitarshow@gmail.com. So a few things to put on your calendar in the coming week, as well as putting on your calendar all the great things that are going to be happening at the 9th Annual Village Building Convergence that's running from tomorrow through June 14th. And again, if you want to join us in this discussion about it with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Well, Mark, let's talk some specifics about what's happening this in the next 2 weeks.
Okay, so VBC starts tomorrow, as you said, and will run to Sunday, June 14th. And the community projects will start on Saturday. Well, actually, some of them have already been underway, but most of the projects will start Saturday, June 6th, and they will run until, most of them will just go until the 13th, Saturday the 13th of June. But in the evening, there's a central venue where hundreds of people will be getting together from these projects. And actually, there's a lot of people coming from other cities to learn about how we're doing this and to become involved. We'll be sitting down and having community dinners together at the central venue. And then that'll be followed by speakers such as Starhawk, a Zone Zero Body Ecology dance teaching. A teacher named Nala Walla will also be here. Daniel Lurch will be speaking about peak oil and global warming. And actually, very significantly, Jan Semenza from Sweden will be with us on Wednesday, June 10th, and he'll be talking about his work there to take city repair and village building convergence models and then use them to change European Union climate change policy. And this is something he's doing very effectively from a major institution in Sweden, so he'll be talking about that work. And that's all about localization, basically. So this is all happening at 1847 Southeast Clinton, basically 19th and Clinton, just east of the New Day School over there. And the events begin at 6:40. Dinner starts around 5 o'clock, and it'll go into the evening. Each speaker and each sort of kind of content-oriented aspect of the evening will be followed by music. So, you know, wonderful music such as Luminous Fog, Tap Water, Sapphire, Bulecion, Alpaca, Physical Hearts, Jujuba, and Cubaneo. So it's a very great diversity of local music. But then we have national leaders like Larry Santoyo, very heavy emphasis on permaculture, basically integrated local urban agriculture solutions. So Larry Santoyo from Los Angeles, and Diana Christian from North Carolina, who's one of the leaders of the kind of global eco-village movement, will be here speaking as well, beautifully, as Robert Gilman, who's another one of the leaders of the eco-village movement. So some pretty heavy hitters, as well as Helen Hill, who will be doing a theater production on Saturday, June 6th. So,
for people who may not be familiar with permaculture, what does that encompass? Some of our listeners may not be.
Okay. Well, as opposed to something like agriculture, where we're basically making food, but we're doing it as this kind of giant-scale production system, permaculture is something that it's a design system that starts off by saying, oh, wow, human beings are part of the world, too. We're part of the ecology. How can we take care of our own waste? How can we minimize the amount of work that we need to do? How can we turn even our own waste into a resource? So doing things mostly related to things like planting around the home, but also retrofitting the home so that it's more energy efficient. The premise of permaculture is that we can redesign the human environment to make it an integral part of the world, so that it's less burdensome to us to maintain our own lives, and it doesn't hurt the world. You could say it that way. But permaculture breaks down as permanent culture, basically.
One of the exciting things about the BBC is that people from any walk of life, young kids, older people, middle-aged people, can come and during the day work on any particular project. You don't have to be necessarily a member of that community to go and work on the project. So go to the City Repair website, the BBC link, and you'll get a big list of all the different projects that are going on. And you can come and actually get your hands dirty working on some of these projects and then go to an evening discussion about these things. So even if you don't know a lot about this, it's a very welcoming environment and a great place to really get engaged in learning both with your body as well as with your mind.
What sort of projects are going on this year? I mean, you have quite a spread, and I mentioned a few at the beginning of the program, but what else is happening in terms of, you know, on-the-ground projects?
Yeah, it's thrilling. Dave, it is thrilling. We are tearing up asphalt in many different locations. We've got depave projects happening.
All right.
Yeah. Some are at schools, and actually I think most are at schools. There's also a sort of renegade granny project, street modification happening down in Selwood. They're just not waiting for anyone to give them permission. So there's some things going on there. But yeah, we're taking up some asphalt, and then there's new intersection repair projects. There's one in St. John's, and there's one in Buckman, and then a whole bunch of others like Sunnyside Piazza and Sherrod Square are repainting their intersections. Lots and lots of these permaculture projects that we mentioned, where people are putting in community gardens, or in Selwood, we're putting in a food forest, which is a vertical garden of fruit-bearing trees and then understory plants that are all, you know, things that people can eat from, such as blueberries and stuff, but then also plant animals and birds, and then ground cover. So a system of vertical gardening, that installation will be happening.
Where's that happening in Selwood?
That's just a block southwest of the Sherrod Square.
Ah, okay.
Oh, and then I should, of course, mention, well, okay, here it is, the solar-powered cat palace.
Okay, that does require a little explanation, I think.
Yeah. Well, this brings a sense of humor and delight for and not just for kitties, but for people, into the mix, and it expands the conversation. This is a vertical palace for cats that is a passive solar building, and it's sort of you'll look at it and you'll like, wow, that looks like a big cat tail sticking up in the ground there, literally like a cat's tail. And then you'll notice all of these cats sitting in there getting along, sunning themselves on these solar porches. The thing will glow at night because it'll capture solar energy during the day. And the most beautiful piece of the cat palace is this spherical room in the kind of in the middle of the tower where cats will go in. There'll be all these little kitty pillows. They'll walk in and there will be an aquarium that they can't get into, but the fish will be swimming and the cats will be sitting there. And we'll be sort of sprinkling catnip onto the cats, and they'll be rolling around and building a little community there with each other. And it just kind of goes on and on. But it's not to be absurd. It's actually to create a spectacle of innovation where people will just stand there saying, they'll either say, wow, I wish I was a cat, or wow, I never thought of that. And maybe then they'll start to realize there's a lot of other things they never thought of.
So this is not part of your outreach program to different communities of
cats are a different community.
Well, let's take a pause there on the feline project and go back to the phone lines, because we want to make sure we get our callers in before we run out of time. Again, and if you want to join us in the conversation with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik, that cat thing has me rattled. give us a call at 503-231-8187. So let's go back to the phone lines. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark and Bruce. I was just curious, if your organization couldn't start planting fruit trees instead of how people in their front yards and the medians plant shade trees. It's like it would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, one of the things that that CiriPair has talked about doing and other associated organizations is to actually create a website that maps out the existing fruit trees, because actually sometimes you have the problem where somebody has a fruit tree in their yard or near their property and they don't actually harvest the fruit. So we're trying to improve people's knowledge of where are you allowed to go and gather or glean food, basically. There is this effort underway, and I think that City Repair and the BBC has moved this argument forward to plant more fruit trees. I think that's a really great point. And the more that we can create our urban spaces as sources of food, I think the better off we'll be in the long term.
One really beautiful project this year, this food forest, it's replacing a fence with an apple espalier. And I should say that there are other projects that have gone on besides in VBC. There was a gorilla project that happened a couple of years ago where certain people that are very friendly to trees supplied a bunch of fruit trees for a certain Southeast community to plant 80 of these things rather than shade trees. So this 80 trees all planted in the same neighborhood, all in the same day, by this massive neighbors who were determined to, live in an orchard and not just live in these kind of sort of shade-oriented but non-fruitful tree environments.
Did that work out pretty good for them?
It's fabulous. It's tasty too, and I live there.
Thanks for the question, caller. We're gonna
have grapes too. Everything.
That's true. That's true.
All right,
great
thank
idea.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Now we're gonna go back to the phone lines, try to squeeze a couple more calls in. Let's go to the next caller. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. My name is Dan Bloom from the historic village of Orenco, and I'd like to say a couple words about the bureaucratic ground roots efforts interface. I think that's what you mentioned earlier, if
mm-hmm.
I try to relate it.
Sure.
Okay. As I said, Old Orenco is long light rail, so it was an anomaly. PSU did a study, and this is about the place to do the kinds of things as City Repair does. So they did this study, and interestingly about the study, because, you like to do high density long light rail, they went directly to the people. Well, doing the planning for the neighborhood, the planner comes up and says open space, so you actually get to plan for open space. At that time, Metro was doing their 96 bond measure. So my project after the planning was to go to them and try to get something acquired. It entered the system at Tier 1. Eventually, it was dropped because it wasn't regional enough. Suggested I go to Washington County. It was judged third in the entire county for Washington County. But then Washington County has a policy of not doing these kinds of spaces in local jurisdictions. So then, and they wanted to give it to the city of Hillsborough.
Dan, I'm going to have to ask you to kind of cut to the chase here because we are running out of time.
Okay. After 13 years, if you can go directly to your city to your city leaders, try to find a champion, then take each one of them one at a time personally. You might not have to do a 13-year effort like we did. We're now working with the Parks Department because the city passed a resolution allowing these ground roots type of things to happen.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And I wish we had more time. It's actually, it sounds like a program for a subject for a whole nother program, but we're going to have to go because we're running slow on time. Appreciate you sharing that effort and admire your tenacity. Thanks, now.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay, and we're going to squeeze one more call in before we wrap things up here with our conversation with Mark Lakeman and Bruce Podobnik. And we have Barbara on the line. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi, yes, good morning. And thanks, everyone, for all the great energy happening with the VBC coming up. Just two quick questions. One is how much it would be for the events in the evenings and if there's an opportunity for sliding scale or exchange for energy to support that project. And also, earlier was mentioned about the energy program happening in Sunnyside, and I'd just like to give a quick website because I don't know if all the information was correct or detailed. It's northwestneighborhoodenergy.org to get all the details of the specifics. Thanks a lot, guys. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks, Barbara.
Well, as far as the ticket price for the VBC, Mark, you know the specifics about that, but let me just say one thing, which is that City Repair and the VBC, we basically use all the proceeds that we get from any ticket sales to support this kind of work. So we do charge a fee. We do allow for work trade and so on. But I just really want to emphasize to everybody, I'll be one of the ticket collectors, that all the proceeds we get from any City Repair or VBC project, it gets fed right back into the organization and the neighborhoods. We have a very low operating budget, actually, as an organization. And so I just want everybody to feel and realize that the money that they contribute, either by buying tickets or in other ways, really goes back to the heart of growing this movement.
Okay. So first of all, go to cityrepair.org/VBC to find out specifics. But as far as getting into the venue at night, people can do work trade in order to, you know, not have to pay money. So there is that route. And on the other hand, there is also a sliding scale, which is, you know, incredibly affordable. I think it's something like $15 to 20 or 25. I'm sorry, I can't give it specifically. But for that, people get an evening meal and then all of the things that happen at the venue. So that does cost some money. But on the other hand, all of the site projects across the city, and there's something like 30 of them, are free. The overall cost of VBC is around $29,000, and we are leveraging all kinds of things to make that happen. It's an over $2 million project, and it's an incredible model in terms of how to partnership and leverage through all of this kind of voluntary engagement of people just going, hey, wait a second, that's my culture. I want to be a part of that. So in the end, the hard costs are really, they're less than $30,000. So, but in order to make all of it happen, there needs to be some amount where the community comes up and just says, hey, I want to contribute to that. So that's what the venue is part of. It generates a little bit of income to make a whole lot of things happen.
Wow, that's very impressive that you're able to leverage it that way and develop those sort of partnerships. Well, unfortunately, we are just about out of time, and I wish we had another hour because I know there's so much more going on. One very, very short, quick question. What's next year's theme? You're starting to work on the 10th annual, aren't you?
Well, let's see. If this year's theme is momentum powered by the people, hopefully it's impact or or arrival or conquest or I don't know, something like that.
Well, we've been talking this morning with Mark Lakeman, co-founder of both the Village Building Convergence and the City Repair Project. and with Bruce Podobnik, who is a professor of environmental sociology at Lewis and Clark College, as well as a board member of the City Repair Project. We've been talking about the 9th annual VBC, which is starting tomorrow, and we'll have the contact information on our website at kboo.fm/voicesfromtheedge, so you can link right in and find all the things that are going on, and I really want to encourage you to participate. It's an amazing event that's been going on now. This is its 9th year, and we hope it's going to enjoy its 90th year. And well, I wouldn't mind being around for that, but that seems unlikely. But again, Mark, Bruce, thank you for coming in this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, well, we're going to be looking at another type of community development next week. We're going to be talking about the ongoing saga of should Lentz have a baseball park there? And we're going to be talking with the Friends of Lentz Park, who have recently organized to raise their objections over Commissioner Randy Leonard's idea that we need to put a major baseball stadium plopped right down in the middle of a neighborhood and use some city lands in the process. So join us next week. Joanne will be back. I'm Dave Mazza, and this is Voices from the Edge. You have a good morning now.